when you think of photography and Africa, what you think about is the missionary zeal that really accompanies its production. So this scandal of naked savages, you know, in the 19th century was a provocation. So, you know, this was partly one of the reasons that really sent people off there to cover them up, to civilize them, to give them Christianity and so on.
This lecture was really good.
And it's my distinct pleasure to be here this evening. The tag for my lecture this evening was that I was going to talk about contemporary African photography and film. That has sort of, you know, shifted a little bit. My talk this evening, Afro-Pessimism and the Global Media, the image of Africa is a very elusive one, and this is what I would like to talk about. And, you know, partly because, you know, many of our encounters with Africa have oftentimes been framed by the media. And, you know, do beg some very vital questions, and these are some of the things that I want to explore. And this is the terrain of what many people, what is called Afro-pessimism. So for me, it is important and necessary that that we confront the idea of Africa first as a substance. But to do so requires us to struggle with the central paradox of this substance by virtue of the fact that Africa is always perched on a precipice, on the threshold between something and nothingness, between survival and negativity of life cycles. At the core of our consideration this evening is the unrelentingly grim view of the world Africans occupy. Of course, you see Darfur. The only way we can respond to Africa if it's, you know, things that are seen to be horrible are happening there, and so on. So this is the terrain of Afro-pessimism, that impossibility of fathoming another kind of understanding of what Africa stands for in the larger imagination. Afro-pessimism proceeds by first invalidating the historical usefulness of African experience. This is often based on the belief that nothing good ever happens in Africa, that her peoples possess nothing of value for the advancement of humanity. The media is filled with this pernicious objectification. Accompanying this notion are those others that seek to explain Africa's inadequacy. Here, emphasis is placed on the point that the more contact one has with Africa, the better the understanding of the deficiency of its human development index.
Up on screen is a photojournalist's picture of a Sudanese child with a vulture waiting for the child to die.
Looking back to the media experience of the Ethiopian famine sheds light on how we should read Carter's photograph of the Sudanese child, whose fate no one knows anything about today. No name. No name was attached to this child. But perhaps a future concert will inform us whether he or she survived or perished, whether an enterprising white knight made it to the refugee camp in time to smite the agents of apocalypse that perpetually amplify the African dependency complex. For in the morality play in which documentary heroism participates, Africans are always at risk and white Europeans are forever dear to deliver them. It is no ordinary photograph. The skeletal hulk of the abandoned child fills the picture plane as a corpulent vulture waits patiently in the background. Something beyond pity accompanied the experience of this image. For me, the child came to represent more than a statistic. He or she was literally carrion. This devastating starkness tore at and touched at the core of our humanitarian impulse. As an African, I felt a combination of shame and anger, disgust and outrage at that scandal of a picture. These images raise serious issues about the nature of photography, representation, and the ethics of media reporting in Africa. Their proliferation numbs the mind to the point of glaucoma. We stop seeing the image. The heroism of the photographer becomes paramount. More importantly, we should become more concerned, rather, with the violence such images do to the collective African body. Careful consideration of photography's wild hallucinations about phantom Africa is not simply about its dimension, but also the depth of photographic uses of Afro-pessimism to perpetuate a uniform, fixed, and singular approach to the study of Africa. This approach, given many of its assumptions, tends to offer sweeping impressions whereby spatial and cultural distinctiveness and diversity become one blurry, indistinguishable thing. Can the photographic event of Afro-pessimism be overcome? And if so, how? To do so, we must look at one major impediment. Most reasonable observers would agree that Africa fares poorly in the lens of the global media industry and the 24-hour news cycle that drives it today. Though the global media is by no means the only agent of this sordid affair, it is infinitely the most saturating. To live in the West is to be intimately acquainted and ruthlessly confronted with the evil eye the media casts on Africa. Africans are turned into specters haunting the photographic imaginary and Western conscience. Entire industries that are dependent on this haunted scene have been sustained by a fiction that has been almost impossible to eradicate. For decades now, the photographic imaginary of Africa has circled the same paradoxical field of representation, either showing us the precarious conditions of life and existence, in which case the African subject always appears at risk, on the margins of life itself, at that intersection where one is forced to negotiate the relationship between man and animal. Because for more than 150 years, photography has been an intractable urger in the visual life world of modernity. Photography, it is said, either sees through the caked layer of life and reality, or it obfuscates them in a relentless production of sentimentality, spectacle, and fragmented rumors of existence. For Roland Barthes, photography's final scenes, often wrought as textures of life and experience, are neither necessarily true nor real, but instead encode a visuality of myth-making that is today collectivized in the daily consumption of mass media images. In contrast to the first, in which a laborious study of the effect of quasi-scientific observation is applied, the frenzy of mass media photography speaks less to the specificity of the photographic image as a carrier of meaning native to a singular subject, but to a whole eschatology of the industry, what Walter Benjamin would call an image world. The photographic meaning of Africa is buffeted, perhaps we should say sandwiched, between these two points of view. In Africa, photography has carried the fragmented rumors of existence and myth-making to another level. In particular, a type of photographic practice has repeatedly staged a veritable phantasmagoria. The manner in which photography frames the African body makes the body appear peculiarly defamiliarized, if not altogether monstrous. To survey these photographic images in newspapers, on television, in film documentaries and magazines is to encounter an atlas of disorder. One is immediately struck by the uniformity of the pictorial focus, namely a resolute commitment to images of entropy. Though such a focus may not perturb most observers of the global photographic industry, the images are clearly at odds with those being made by a large number of African practitioners. Not discounting the census black marker, take any number of images published in an African newspaper or magazine and compare them to those that appear in Europe and the United States. The dissonance is striking. The gap between these two photographic discourses points us to a historical disjunction in the relationship between photography and Africa. This relationship is both rich and troubling. From the earliest recorded history of the photographic encounter, Africa has made for a fascinating and elusive subject, at once strange, intoxicating, carnal, primitive, wild, luminous. At first, the desire to record the exotic, mysterious beauty of the Black Continent may have provided the incentive to invent a kind of sport in which a hunter-like figure, wielding congeries of instruments, stalks a game-like subject, suspended between an abyss of indeterminacy and plenitude, waiting to be literally captured. But I think, you know, you see, you get the picture. So, but what I'm interested in is really the way, in the kind of colonial fantasies that circulate in work like Peter Beard's and so on, and which for me sort of expresses the ethos of what I call a vampiric machine and its primitivizing capacities. Beard appears simultaneously close to and distant from his subjects. And of course, the sleight of hand that permits this form of visualization is a simple trick of the telescopic lens, a tool of surveillance that enables the photographer to feign a kind of intimacy, even if the real intent is to remain untouched by that artificial proximity. So the subject is both close and far away. You know, with the telescopic lens, you can draw the subjects very close to you, but there is this fundamental civilizational barrier between the photographer and the subject. And I think this is important to take into consideration. And this distance is placed at a liminal point of the dichotomy of spatial and temporal relations. It exposes a civilizational gap, and at the same time, eschews any kind of empathy in social relations. What I'm describing here ought to be familiar to us, since it is not at all different from the ideology that supports the geopolitics of the North and South relations. To make sense of the spatial format in distance and closeness and temporal remoteness at the core of Beard's, you know, photographic values, one may turn to the rich research that has been initiated in anthropology. You see, I mean, I've nothing against anthropology. In his remarkable book, Time and the Other, How Anthropology Makes Its Objects, Johannes Fabian explains this phenomenological separation. And I quote him, and he says, "When modern anthropology began to construct its other in terms of topoi implying distance, difference, and opposition, its intent was above all, but at least also, to construct othered space and time, a cosmos for Western society to inhabit, rather than understanding other cultures," end quote. According to Fabian, at the root of the separation of self and other is a severance of temporal connection to circumvent and deny coevalness, which is coexistence. This denial of coevalness is usually based on the principle that even if the self and other share space, they may not share the same time. And this is precisely what I'm trying to sort of describe in this, you know, format of the telescopic lens. Same space, but not the same time. In other words, there's no intersubjective link between the two. This lack offers one explanation for the dichotomy that has been a principal problem in modernity between the idea of the modern and the primitive, the civilized and the savage, the developed and the underdeveloped, and ultimately self and other. Photography reflexively encodes these orders of civility and lack of civility in its approaches to the other. Photography, which is an art about time, inverts the structure of time in order to create an unnatural temporality that it does not wish to share or coexist with the other. When you think of photography and Africa, what you think about is the missionary zeal that really accompanies its production. So this scandal of naked savages, you know, in the 19th century was a provocation. So, you know, this was partly one of the reasons that really sent people off there to cover them up, to civilize them, to give them Christianity and so on. But in the 20th century, what photography, the cure of photography is the humanitarian industry. Imagine if scenes like this stop, a whole, you know, thousands of people will be out of a job. And I'm not being cynical. I'm not saying that these images do not exist. I'm just trying to sort of to look at that if we remove the incentive of the cure, what would become of this industry of humanitarianism? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with humanitarianism, but we need to begin to have to develop a proper critique of development and humanitarianism as it concerns disaster images and so on. It is a huge industry. So we really need to think very, very carefully about that. Well, so what I would like to say, like, let this be, you know, some of the things that I want to offer in terms of helping us sort of think about some of the questions about Afro-pessimism that I've offered this evening. Thank you.